Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Renoites. My name is Connor McQuivy. I'm your host as always. Thank you so much for tuning in. Renoites is the weekly interview podcast where I talk to all sorts of folks from here in Northern Nevada who are doing interesting and important work for the area. This week on the podcast, I'm excited to welcome Dr. Hillary Lopez. She is the executive director of the Reno Housing Authority. Reno Housing Authority is the main source of affordable housing in the Northern Nevada area. Things like public housing, housing vouchers, a lot of other things related to providing housing for people who are below the average income level here in the area. We've done a lot of episodes this season about housing, development, where people live, how we manage to find housing for everybody, and this is an important part of that conversation. So I'm grateful to Dr. Lopez for coming on the show to talk about it. One important note about this episode, it was recorded before the big news that the Reno Housing Authority has made a deal with Jacobs Entertainment in a land swap that's going to result in another new affordable housing development in the downtown area. We didn't talk about this on this episode because it was recorded before that was announced, but there's been some great reporting on it. I would recommend you check out Downtown Makeover. Mike Van Houten does a fantastic job of covering all of the development stuff, a lot of how Reno's growing and changing. If you're not following or subscribed to Downtown Makeover, you should definitely do that. And they did some good reporting on this as well as other projects. That's downtownmakeover.com, and be sure you follow them on social media as well. There are only a couple episodes left of this season. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. I've been really, really happy with all of the guests who've come on the show. I'm always very grateful when people want to take the time to sit down and have a conversation about what they're doing and why it matters. If you're enjoying the show and you find value in it, I would love for you to help contribute to this show's financial sustainability. Renoites is a listener-funded, community-oriented kind of project, and it can't survive without contributions, financial contributions from listeners just like you. A lot of folks already contribute on Patreon. Thank you so much to the folks who contribute to the show on patreon.com. Even for as little as $3 a month, some people get five, some 10, some even 20. It makes a huge difference and is the only way that I can continue to produce this show. Again, that's patreon.com/renoites. This episode was recorded at the National Automobile Museum. Thank you so much to the Automobile Museum for giving me a place to record a lot of this season's episodes. It's been great to have a space to record. They've got a cool little podcast studio there. And the Auto Museum itself is just a really awesome thing here for Northern Nevada. For people who are visiting, I think it's a great tourist attraction. And if you live here locally and haven't been in a while, might want to check it out. It's a really awesome space, and I'm grateful to be able to record some of my episodes there. So shout out to the Automobile Museum. You can learn more at automuseum.org. That is their website. If you have suggestions, feedback, ideas, thoughts, please feel free to reach out to me. My email address is Connor, C-O-N-O-R, at renoites.com. And of course, be sure you're following me on Instagram. That's at renoites on Instagram. That is a great way to stay in touch and see what's going on with the show. And now this week's guest from the Reno Housing Authority, Dr. Hillary Lopez. Dr. Hillary Lopez, executive director of the Reno Housing Authority. Welcome to Renoites.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to learn more about Reno Housing Authority because on this show, we talk about housing a lot. Like just personally, I'm very invested in how we do housing and how people get housed in Reno. I know it's a very big issue. Just generally, we talk a lot about housing and RHA is a pretty big piece of the housing picture in Reno. So to start, can you tell me what the Reno Housing Authority is? So I understand that you do a lot of public housing and affordable housing, but I don't know, are you a government agency? Are you a nonprofit? Can you just tell me about the structure of the organization?
Sure. So the Reno Housing Authority was actually created in 1943. And while our name is the Reno Housing Authority, we actually serve all of Washoe County. And our mission is really to provide fair, sustainable, affordable housing in diverse neighborhoods across Washoe County. And then also to use that housing as a stable foundation for our clients so that they could then pursue other economic or educational opportunities that help them improve the quality of their life.
Mm-hmm.
We are a quasi-governmental agency. We are overseen by a board of five commissioners appointed by the mayor of the city of Reno. Our current board consists of Mayor Hillary Sheevy and then Councilwoman Kathleen Taylor, as well as then mayoral appointees, Commissioner Mark Sullivan. Our chair is former city council person Dave Ayazi, and then we have a resident commissioner as well that sits on our board.
Got it. So how does the kind of oversight work? Do you have like public meetings and things the way that the city council does?
Yes. So we are subject to all of the open meeting requirements. Our board meets on a monthly basis, the last Tuesday of the month at noon. All of our meetings are actually available on our website, which is renoha.org.
Got it. So as far as the funding goes, I know that like housing and urban development, right? Like the federal department HUD is a big funder of these projects. And then you have local organizations or agencies who distribute and manage that. So I know some of your funding comes from HUD. And I know there was recently, I can't remember what it was called, they passed something through the legislature. So there's a lot of money that came in from our state government. Can you talk a little bit about the funding and how you're funded and how you operate?
We primarily receive funding through the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, as we call them. And that funds the bulk of our programs. The rest of our funding primarily comes from our business activities. So we don't receive any local tax dollars to operate. And then from time to time, we are able to access other funding, such as the funds that you mentioned, which are the state and local fiscal recovery funds that came from the federal government to the state of Nevada. So the state of Nevada allocated $500 million towards affordable housing initiatives. And they had an application process to competitively award those funds. And so the Housing Authority submitted applications for numerous projects, and we were fortunate that we did receive funding for several of those applications.
Awesome. And you said so Reno Housing Authority has been around for a long time in the area.
We just celebrated our 80th birthday.
Oh, wow. That is a very long time indeed. Can you tell me a little about some of the history of the works that you've done here in the Reno area over that time?
So the Reno Housing Authority has 750 units of public housing that we own and manage, and those are spread across 8 public housing properties, 5 of which are targeted for families, and then 3 of which serve seniors and those with disabilities. In addition to that, we also maintain a portfolio of what we call our expanded housing opportunities, which are either other federally funded and restricted affordable housing projects or just other multifamily developments that the board has strategically purchased over time that allow us to provide additional affordable housing within the community. We also have over 2,500 housing choice vouchers and over 500 specialty vouchers that we use to help our clients find housing within the private market.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I want to ask you more about kind of the differences of these types of housing support that you do. And then you have other programs too, like job training kind of things. And I think a food bank now is a new thing that you've done.
Yes. So I think that folks are most aware of our housing programs, but we actually have a really robust resident services program, which includes workforce development, youth programming, health and wellness programs, senior focus programs. And as part of our senior focus programs, we were able to just recently partner with the Food Bank of Northern Nevada and then open a Golden Groceries right on site at one of our public housing projects, which is a great way to assist our seniors and others within our community.
Yeah. How long have you worked with the Reno Housing Authority? How'd you come to work in this world?
So I'm relatively new. I have been with the authority for about 18 months now. So still kind of learning and getting settled, but just thrilled to be here. The Reno Housing Authority has a great reputation within our community as well as within the public housing community. And so just feel very privileged and humbled to have been asked to lead such a great organization.
Yeah. Were you working in nonprofit work before? And kind of what was your trajectory that it landed you here right now?
So I've been in the industry for over 20 years now. Prior to working for the Reno Housing Authority, I was working at a group called Praxis Consulting. And we worked with public housing authorities, nonprofits, and other for-profit developers of affordable housing, and we would help them structure and assemble the financing for affordable housing developments in communities across the country. And then prior to that, I actually worked at the State of Nevada Housing Division for close to 10 years overseeing the housing programs throughout the state.
Okay. So yeah, definitely like a focus on housing throughout your career. Why do you think that is? What draws you to housing as a, you know, a focus for you?
I've just always really been interested in urban issues and in housing issues. I received my doctorate at the University of Denver in urban geography and was really fortunate that I was able to get on for an internship with the City of Denver's Housing and Neighborhood Development Department and started working on community and housing issues and just really enjoyed it. It's really important to me that families have access to safe, decent, affordable housing. I feel very grateful that I don't have to worry about where I'm going to sleep at night. I don't have to make a decision between buying groceries and paying for housing. And it's important to me that other families don't have to do that as well. Mm-hmm. So I've just continued my career in that way.
Yeah. What's urban geography? How's that different than urban planning or other kind of like urban studies? I'm just curious because I always describe myself as being, oh, I'm very interested in, you know, how cities are built and urban planning, but I don't have any formal education in that. So I'm just curious, like, what's urban geography? How's that different than the other things?
So it is similar to urban planning. There's a lot of overlap. So a lot of the classes that I took focused on land use planning and those types of topics. But urban geography then just has a slightly different bent because it takes more of kind of a look in terms of the ways that cities are built and the processes that shape cities and other kind of geographic factors.
Oh, gotcha. What brought you to Reno? How do you like living in Reno? How long have you been here?
I love Reno. I've been here for over 20 years now. I've raised my family here. It's been a great place to raise a family. I originally came to Reno from the East Coast to study and complete my master's at the University of Nevada, Reno.
Let's talk a little bit more about the different types of public housing that you have, right? So what does public housing generally look like? I think that people have a perception of public housing. When I hear public housing, I think the first thing that comes to mind is projects, right? Like in the past, that was the idea of public housing is there's like housing projects and they have a bad reputation for, you know, for being run down or whatever. They're not adequately funded, those kind of things. But that's a very old, I think, stereotype of public housing. It doesn't necessarily look the same way that it did 30 years ago. So can you start by telling me what like actual public housing, these properties that you actively manage, what does public housing look like now, today in Reno?
I think a lot of people are surprised when they do come out to our public housing properties by the way that they do look. Our public housing properties are beautiful and they look just like other properties within the community. In many cases, either for our public housing or our other affordable housing projects, you wouldn't be able to tell that those are subsidized housing versus other multifamily housing units within the community, or for that matter, other single family or duplexes for some of our homes that we own throughout the community. They have amenities, similar types of amenities that you would find at other market rate properties. So they have outdoor playgrounds and community spaces and just provide a safe, decent, affordable home for those in our community that need it.
Mm-hmm. What is the income requirements? Like, who is eligible for public housing and how do people get into the public housing system that you run?
So we maintain a wait list of those that are interested in residing in our public housing properties. And then we are continuously going through that wait list and calling in applicants to determine eligibility. For the most part, our housing serves individuals and families that are at or below 50% of our area median income. So primarily very low to extremely low income households. And with that, we also serve a lot of seniors and disabled households.
Mm-hmm. How do people come into learning about and finding about public housing, right? Like, what kind of outreach do you do, or how do people learn about the opportunity for this kind of like subsidized housing?
Unfortunately, as you're probably aware, there's just such a need for affordable housing in our community. And so we always have more demand than we have supply of public housing units available. But we routinely have folks that come to our office to find out. Our staff is always out in the community trying to provide information, not only about our public housing, but also about our other housing programs. Always trying to encourage landlords to accept Section 8 or Housing Choice Vouchers, as they're now called, so that this way clients who receive those can find housing within our community. And I would encourage anyone who's interested to routinely check our website for updates on when our wait lists for either our public housing or our Housing Choice Voucher programs open, mm-hmm. to find out about information about the other projects that we're doing that also have different income restrictions. And then we always encourage folks to join all the different wait lists that they want or believe that they're eligible for, so that this way, whichever one they come up on first, hopefully that's an opportunity that's a fit for them.
Gotcha. How long do people generally end up waiting on wait lists? What does that look like for folks?
It's a hard question. It really just depends sometimes on how fast some of our units are turning over. We try and maintain our wait list so that if someone's on our wait list, we have a reasonable expectation of providing housing to them within about an 18 to 24 month time frame.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more about the expanded housing thing. That's not the public housing properties that you were talking about, but there's a lot of, there's single family homes and duplexes and other properties that probably look and feel and operate a little bit differently than your main properties. Can you tell me about what those look like and kind of how they fit into your portfolio of housing?
Yeah, they're really a great addition to our portfolio. And my predecessors, as well as the board, has been really strategic and was able, especially during the last economic downturn, to purchase a lot of both single family homes or duplexes throughout the community, as well as some multifamily projects. And then the board has adopted a policy that for those that don't have federal restrictions on them, that the board has a policy that we will rent those properties no more than 80% of current market rents as an additional benefit for those in our community that are seeking affordable housing.
Okay. So even outside of like the standard public housing process, these properties that you own, you basically just rent a bit cheaper than market rent.
Yes.
On an ongoing basis?
Yes.
Right on. Tell me more about the housing choice vouchers. So Section 8, as it's previously called, and people still, I think, refer to it as Section 8 a lot. And my understanding is that's basically a subsidy that goes to the landlord. Like, landlords can accept these vouchers and it makes up the difference between what someone can pay and what the landlord is asking. Is that how those vouchers work? And kind of what's the history of that type of housing support?
Yeah, that is basically how the vouchers work. So someone would come up on our wait list and they would be assigned a housing choice voucher, then they are able to go out into the general market, find a unit that best meets their needs for their family within whichever neighborhood they prefer. And then as long as that landlord will accept that housing choice voucher and that unit passes a physical inspection, then that household pays a certain amount towards rent. And the rest of the rent is guaranteed through the housing choice voucher. Mm-hmm. And so it's really a great way for landlords, whether they have one unit or 100 units or 1,000 units, to help those in our community who are out with these housing choice vouchers secure housing that best meets their family's needs. Mm-hmm. And it also provides guaranteed income. And because we are what is known as a HUD-designated moving to work agency, we have some additional flexibility in how we use our funding. And so as part of that, we've set up additional landlord incentives. And so as part of those landlord incentives, there are referral bonuses, there are incentives for if a tenant were to vacate the unit ahead of their lease termination, and other types of incentives that we could offer for landlords. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that our landlords generally aware of these things? Or because I see ads that say no Section 8 on them sometimes on housing listings, which I don't know if that's legal or not. But there seems to be sometimes a perception that landlords don't want vouchers, and hearing that there's benefits, what kind of response do you get from landlords in general? What challenges do you have in getting landlords to understand how the program works?
In Nevada, we don't have legislation that prevents source of income discrimination. And so it is unfortunate, though, when someone does have a housing choice voucher and a landlord will not accept it. I always tell people within the community, our clients are the same as any other renters. You know, they just need some assistance in paying their rent. But our renters take good care of the units. And actually, we provide additional protections because if there are challenges with the renters, we have a landlord liaison who's a main point of contact that landlords could reach out to and identify what the issues are. And then our landlord liaison can work to help resolve those. As I mentioned, we also have these other incentives like our damage mitigation fund and ways to ensure that rents are paid if tenants do leave before their lease is over. So, you know, it's really a very good program. It really is a very easy way to help those in our community who need affordable housing find units within markets or neighborhoods that work best for them in terms of where they are employed, where they'd like to raise their children, school access, and all of those types of things.
Yeah, I have some questions about where these things are located, because I do think that's also important too, is how people get to the places that they need to be and making sure that this type of housing is not all concentrated in one area, which creates problems in itself. But you mentioned the quality of housing too, right? That there's, you know, a general inspection of these properties. And again, I think that the perception of some kind of lower income or subsidized housing is concerns about the quality of the housing. Can you talk a little bit about what, and no, you said the public housing properties that you have are like every other apartment. You have all of these houses and buildings that you operate. And how does that kind of fit into our picture of quality housing? Because that's also a concern. It's not just, do we have a roof over our head, but is it, you know, a quality place to live? Can you just talk a little bit about RHA's kind of role in ensuring quality housing?
So I think it's very important for our board, for myself, for all of the RHA staff. We take a lot of pride and the units that we own and operate. We're also a long-term community member. We live here. We raise our families here. The organization has been helping this community, as I mentioned previously, for over 80 years. You know, we want to build quality, affordable housing that's long-term assets for our neighborhoods and for, you know, the Washoe County area. And I would challenge anyone to come and look at our properties and just see for themselves. I mean, they are all well maintained. Unfortunately, you know, at the federal level, we've seen over time that there are decreases in funding for public housing authorities, for public housing in general, in terms of operations. And that's why it's also so important that we have access to other funding so that we could consistently maintain our public housing properties. And then through things like the State Home Means Nevada Initiative funds, we're able to reinvest in our properties, and we are undertaking some major renovations now that we otherwise wouldn't be able to really modernize and address infrastructure and other issues so that these properties remain high quality assets for many years and can serve families within our community for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm. Do the changes in our general housing market affect how you're able to do the work that you do? Because housing gets more expensive. It doesn't stay cheap for you, I imagine, that you're also subject to the housing market, even though you are operating somewhat outside of it in some ways. Can you talk a little bit about that, how the rising tide, or however you want to describe it, of housing prices affects the work that you're able to do?
Yeah, so we are subject to a lot of the same market conditions that other developers are subject to on the operations side, increases in the cost of materials and the cost of insurance, increase the cost of operating these. And as I just mentioned, we see decreased funding at the federal level. And so it becomes important for us to figure out how to run more efficiently and more effectively without impacting the quality of the housing that we're able to provide to our residents and within the community. So we are always looking and exploring ways that we can do that. And then when we're building new housing, you know, we go through the same processes in terms of planning and pre-development as other developers do. And we also are subject to the same market conditions as other developers. So as the price of labor has increased, as the cost of materials has increased, all of those types of things impacts our ability to build new affordable housing without either additional funding or being really creative in terms of how we're structuring financing or finding new funding to bring into our community and to the housing authority to make these projects move forward.
Yeah. Can you tell me more about the reducing of funding at the federal level? Is that something that's been going on for a long time? Is that something that you see continuing to happen? Or is there lobbying for that to go the other direction and get more federal money? Kind of, can you talk a little bit about that trend?
At the federal level, you know, each year our funding is subject to congressional appropriation. So it does fluctuate from year to year. We have seen over time, though, that there's been a decrease in the level of funding for public housing and for some of our other programs. We receive different sources of funding through HUD, some that help support our public housing in terms of operating grants and then capital funding, as well as then for our housing choice vouchers in terms of what are called HAP payments or housing assistance payments. And one of the things that HUD has done at the federal level, because of fluctuations in funding levels, and because they're aware that across the country, there's a backlog of deferred maintenance at public housing authorities and public housing properties, that there's just not enough federal monies to appropriately address, they've come up with a variety of new tools that housing authorities could access to kind of help leverage additional monies to reinvest in their public housing properties. And so we are taking advantage of some of those new tools and repositioning some of our public housing properties.
Got it. You have some new projects that are just coming online or under construction now, right? The exciting stuff. Can you talk about the projects that you have that are under construction?
Yes. So it's very exciting. We have a couple of new projects under construction. One is our Dick Scott Manor project, which is located off of 8th Street and Sutro. And it is 12 units of housing, all dedicated for low to extremely low or homeless or at-risk veterans. And so it is under construction currently. We anticipate that construction will be done this summer and hope to have 12 new homes available and occupied later this year.
Excellent. And you just broke ground on another project recently too, right?
Yes, we just broke ground recently on our Rail Yard Flats project. And so that will bring 15 additional units of affordable housing to the downtown Sparks area. We're super excited about that project because it is located very close to the RTC's public transit depot, close to employers, lots of amenities, the downtown Sparks special events. And also, we're excited because, you know, we like to develop housing throughout the community, and this gives us an opportunity to do something within the Sparks area.
Yeah. Tell me more about how you make those decisions about what you're building and where. Obviously, the finances are going to be a part of it, of where you can afford to build and what you can afford to build. But kind of what does that like early development process look like, where you're getting ideas about what is needed and how you're going to get it done?
So before undertaking any kind of development, we look for sites that are close to employment, close to public transit, near to amenities, near to health services or other community services that may be a benefit to our residents that would reside there. So those are always things that we are assessing. We're looking at diverse neighborhoods. So like you mentioned earlier, making sure that all of our housing isn't necessarily concentrated within one specific area, but that we're providing opportunities throughout Reno, Sparks, and the unincorporated areas for those who would access our housing. So we look at all of those things. We, of course, look at the cost of land and then start modeling, like, how much would it cost for us to develop this property? And then where could we access some of the monies that we need? And it's important to note that not only for the Reno Housing Authority, but for affordable housing developers in general, typically we have what's called layered financing. So we're not just utilizing one source of money to make these projects move forward. It's typically needed that we are going and accessing conventional financing, state financing, local financing to then help us build all of the resources needed to move these projects forward. So it really takes a village.
Yeah.
takes a village and it takes time.
Does that create additional challenges of having to kind of like piecemeal together the funding? Or is there some benefit to having like different areas that you can reach to instead of relying on basically like one investor or one loan? Because that also has some risks associated with it too, right? As we've seen with some of these projects in town. Can you talk a little bit about the kind of like pluses and minuses of the way you have to do financing?
I could try. You know, so one of the negatives is that it just adds time. So there are different funding processes that we have to apply for that occur at specific times throughout the year. And so you're trying to line up your project to align with those application timeline so that this way you can move forward on a certain path and schedule. And then if for some reason you're unsuccessful in receiving those funds, then you may end up having to wait till the next application cycle to reapply or then look for additional other resources that you could access to keep going on your time schedule. But the positive is that there's not, unfortunately, enough resources that you can just access one. And I always say this, that in Nevada, we're very lucky that our local elected officials are very supportive. Our local staff, our state staff are very supportive of affordable housing, and they work together to kind of help ensure that you can access financing and then that your project can stay on track for its development schedule.
Yeah, you mentioned that in your previous employment, you worked with housing authorities in other areas and you lived in Colorado. And so you have some experience of seeing how other cities or other municipalities or organizations deal with affordable housing. What's your experience been like seeing Reno Housing Authority compared to, you know, the other organizations that you've seen or worked with?
Reno Housing Authority, you know, it always amazes me the dedication and the talent of our staff. And, you know, I may seem biased, but I would definitely say that it's a very high-performing and high-functioning housing authority. I mentioned earlier that we have what's called moving to work designation, and that is special designation that HUD has awarded to particular housing authorities across the country. We were one of the initial 39 housing authorities that received that designation. And while it doesn't entitle us to additional funding, it does allow us flexibility in how we use the HUD funds that we receive. And it really gives us an opportunity to do some demonstration projects and build locally based solutions that best meet the needs of our area.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about Reno's housing in general? So I know that Reno Housing Authority is only part of it, but the topic of housing is, you know, front of mind for a lot of people in a lot of different ways. So obviously, housing is very expensive. There are a lot of people moving here, and we're probably not building enough for them. And that is the reason that there is such high cost of living, right? And I said before we started recording, I'm one of these like impatient people that's like, how come we can't do this right now, right? Like, let's get shovels in the ground. Let's make things happen. I'm like, where's the housing? Can you talk a little bit about the private sector? I know that obviously you're not working as a private developer, but what's this like for private developers? What are the holdups, I guess, both for Reno Housing Authority or for private developers about moving things along quickly? Because clearly there's a demand, right? Rents are through the roof. So people want to live here. People are moving here. Landlords and you would think developers can probably make a lot of money if there's a lot of demand. So what's slowing us down?
Well, Reno's a great area. Yeah. And so, you know, we continue to attract new people to the area. And unfortunately, it takes time to develop housing. And that's true both for the Reno Housing Authority as well as for other developers. And so while we need housing now, and there are a lot of projects that are underway or starting, it just takes time to get through the planning process, to get through construction, and then to place those units in service. And you know, they face the same types of other challenges that we do in terms of right now, material delays, supply chain issues, cost of construction, and, you know, all of that is unfortunately adding additional time to get these developments completed.
Mm-hmm. I know the city has recently been talking about some changes to codes and I don't know how to describe them, not codes, I guess, but like the city's recently talked about changes to how we are able to build housing, what we're able to build. I know that there's talk about accessory dwelling units or granny flats, they call them, or upzoning different neighborhoods to allow for more density. As someone who studied urban geography, can you talk a little bit about how a city or the legal part of creating the ability for different types of housing to be built, how that plays a role into whether stuff gets built or not?
What I can say is that it really just depends on the jurisdiction and their zoning code and what's allowed in specific neighborhoods. At the state level, there was recently legislation that was passed in the last session that requires municipalities to look at ways that they could expedite review and approval of affordable housing projects. And so that is something that we are working with our colleagues at the local jurisdictions on those types of issues and what processes can be put in place to meet those new legislative requirements. The city of Reno is also, as you mentioned, looking at its zoning code and what changes it could make to potentially allow for things like accessory dwelling units in either certain neighborhoods or throughout the entire city. And really, they're exploring it as ways to increase access to and the supply of affordable housing, because there is just a critical need within our community right now for those units.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I always think about is where we're building housing. And I know you mentioned that we want to have housing that's close to schools and close to transit, if it exists in the Reno Sparks area, close to jobs, things like that. So there's also this kind of question of creating density around walkability and bikeability. And, you know, it's an expense to live out in the land of sprawl and have to pay for gas. And, you know, time is money too. And a long commute that costs people a lot of their time. Can you talk about density in general and how Reno is kind of changing in that regard? Because I feel like I'm seeing a lot more density coming in downtown. There's a lot of projects downtown right now that are pretty large apartment buildings. And my hope is that eventually we'll have enough people downtown for something like a grocery store and kind of create that cascading effect. But can you talk a little bit about what you think about as far as where all of this affordable housing goes and balancing the need for being close to things and also being close to transit if we have it, but also letting people live where it makes the most sense? Sometimes it is cheaper to have housing that is out further from the urban core. So what goes into those decisions about locations as far as convenience and sustainability for, you know, our area?
It is always a balance in terms of looking at the cost of land versus the ability to be closer to services and transit and those types of things. And so that is something that we analyze and look at when we're determining whether or not a specific site or development would make sense. And also, that's one of the benefits of the Housing Choice Voucher program is those that have a Housing Choice Voucher can use that to search for housing in any area of Washoe County that best meets their needs. And so even if we don't have a development that's out in the North Valleys or in East Sparks, but that's where it makes most sense for a household to reside, they could use that Housing Choice Voucher then to find housing in those areas. We do look at walkability. We check walk scores and things like that to, you know, try and ensure that we are providing housing that's accessible, that helps and dovetails into some of the overarching goals for our region in terms of the regional plan and development with inside the McCarran Loop, infill development. Rail Yard Flats is a great example of an infill development on what was previously a vacant lot in the downtown Sparks area. So we're always analyzing and looking at all of that when we're out trying to determine kind of where to build, where to invest, and what works best for the residents and clients that we're serving.
Okay. What's your wish list? If you had a magic wand, what would you make happen for affordable housing in Reno?
So if I had a magic wand, I would make it possible for everyone to find and maintain affordable housing. You know, I think it's really important that everyone has affordable housing. It really does provide that foundation. If you don't have to worry about housing and where you're going to live, or if you can maintain the housing that you're in, it gives you an opportunity to think about other things that are important to you, whether that's continuing education or employment or sports for your children or other activities with your children or your children staying within a certain school or school area, school zone, all of those things that sometimes you don't have the ability to think about if you're just worried about your housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the maintenance and the kind of stability of housing, I think, is key. I have another episode this season that's about housing and poverty and the challenge of when housing costs or, you know, issues of poverty take up so much space in your life that you can't do the other things. You need a foundation to kind of go forward from there. So I'm glad you mentioned that as kind of a key. How do you work on the ongoing sustainable part of that? Like, you can have someone in affordable housing. Is that enough to kind of give them the foundation to go forward? Or I know you have job training stuff and other additional programs. Can you just talk about the kind of continuing support that you have done or that you do?
Yeah, for the residents and clients that we serve through either our public housing or our Housing Choice Voucher programs, we have workforce development programs that enable them to build their skills. We work with EDON and other employers within the region to help connect our residents with employment opportunities. We do webinars and seminars and workshops on financial literacy, on investing, on all of those things that would help them improve the economic quality of their household. And then we just recently started a program called our Start Smart program, which is really geared to teens ages 14 to 18. So really that high school age group. And what it does is it helps them with instruction on resume writing, on financial literacy, on all of those things that then kind of prepare them for success once they leave high school. And as they're in the program, they're actually earning and escrowing funds for the workshops that they participate in. And then when they graduate from the program, they could use those escrowed monies towards continuing education, certificate programs, helping their household, getting set up in a first apartment, or other things that help them on their path to success. So we're extremely pleased with being able to offer that program. And in our first class of graduates last year, each participant escrowed on average about $8,400. And then on top of that, our board has allocated money for educational scholarships. So we had three participants that applied for and received $10,000 scholarships, which is helping them then continue on with their education at different local colleges and universities.
Excellent. What did we miss? What else do you want people to know about the work you're doing at RHA?
In general, you know, I hope that this has provided your audience with more information on all of the great things going on at the Reno Housing Authority. I would also like to mention that, you know, we do have a large population of seniors and disabled households that we provide housing and services to. And, you know, that is a very important part of our board's mission. We have goals around promoting health and wellness of our residents. And we were just able to open a Golden Grocery at our Tom Sawyer public housing site to really help with kind of food insecurity amongst our seniors and disabled households. On top of that, we have different nutrition and wellness classes. We have health classes or different types of health fairs that we're able to bring to those. And one of the big things that we try and do is just make sure that our seniors are out and have access to kind of activities that really prevent loneliness or try and encourage them to engage with their neighbors, our staff, and others to give them a sense of belonging within their community and really help them to live independently for as long as possible.
Yeah, excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great
thank
to learn about
me.
What the Reno Housing Authority does. Again, I just have such a strong interest in housing in general. So this show has been really rewarding in letting me talk to people who are actively working in local housing, both affordable and all different types of developers, and just having a better grasp of how things work, because I think very often people can't see the bigger picture. I think just reading the headlines about, oh, it's so expensive to live here, oh, this, you know, this developer is doing that thing, that's a very small piece of the story. So I appreciate you coming on the show to talk about the part that you are playing in our housing here in Northern Nevada.
Thank you for having me. I think the Reno Housing Authority, we really want to be part of the continued housing solution. We've been part of this community for 80 years, and we look forward to kind of expanding the housing and services that we could offer over the next 80 and even further into the future. So thank you again for having me.
Listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Renoites. And of course, special thanks to my guest, Dr. Hillary Lopez, for coming on the show. Always great to talk about housing and how we are finding homes for everyone here in Northern Nevada, because it is such an important issue. Don't forget, there's a little bit of a bonus segment for patrons. That's at patreon.com/renoites, available for everyone who contributes to the show at any level. Again, patreon.com/renoites for a few extra minutes with Dr. Lopez. If you enjoyed this episode or any other, please do me a favor and help spread the word about Renoites. I'm just about 3 years into producing this show. I've had over 135 episodes, but I still run into people who listen to podcasts, who like podcasts, but they don't know that it exists. So spread the word, tell your friends and family, share posts on social media. I'd like to think that this show is a really valuable resource for anyone who lives in Northern Nevada, but not unless they know about it. I do what I can promoting on social media, telling people about the show, but you can really help just by spreading the word too. I really appreciate you telling people about the show and sending them to listen wherever they get podcasts. Renoites is available on all major podcast platforms. Next week's guest on the show is Chris Wagner, the new editor of the Reno News and Review, the editor of Double Scoop, the arts publication that she started a few years ago. And we had a great conversation about local media. The very first episode of Renoites was with Bob Conrad from This Is Reno. We've had a few different episodes about local journalism, local media, and this one is a great addition to that conversation. So check that out next Tuesday. And that's all I've got for you this week. Have a good one.